The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
11 minutes past 7 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com on your Tuesday morning. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program. Just like Wayne out in Somerville. How are you, Wayne?
Oh, I'm fine. Congratulations on being the number one show in the Lowcountry.
Wow, thank you.
Well, that means we got fantastic listeners.
I got a few points
I want to push out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in the trucking industry, and I was in favor of a 4 cent gas hike.
Yeah.
So we would be competitive.
Right.
Now, based on $600 million, people buying fuel coming into South Carolina, eating at restaurants, staying at motels, that will drop because people will buy fuel in Georgia and North Carolina.
Right, as they pass through, yeah.
Right. In Fort Mill, thousands of people come from Charlotte every day to buy their fuel in Fort Mill.
Mm-hmm.
But the new part of this bill, this 4% keep it simple philosophy of mine, we're going to have to hire more people to do all this paperwork and to do this rebate.
The rebate thing was really where things started to get very, very convoluted for me. But you know, the governor says that we've got enough money to pay for the roads. Wayne, I got to let you go here because we want to get to Colby Thielen from News 2. Colby, you are out at the Ion neighborhood right now in Mount Pleasant?
That's correct. We're right here on Saturday Drive, right at the intersection of North Shelmore.
So there was a report of a shooting this morning. Do we have ambulance on the scene right now?
So it looks like there's EMS in the driveway of the house just to the left of the Creek Club here in the Ion neighborhood.
Right.
And what appeared to be, it's hard to see from where we're at. The police have pushed us back a little bit. But over the fence, it looked like there was also an ambulance there on the scene as well. So we're hoping to get an update sometime soon in the next few minutes.
Yeah. Do we have any information about whether or not the coroner has been called?
We don't have that information yet. We're told that the spokesperson for the Mount Pleasant Police Department is on the way.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be able to fill us in on that. But I can tell you we're looking at about 10 police units out here. The fire department was called as well. And it appears that the fire truck just went around the corner toward the direction of the house that we're talking about here. So
all right. Well,
we have a good idea of what's happening pretty soon. But, you know, the crazy thing is that just 9 miles down the road, again this morning, another reported robbery at Harris Teeter.
Right.
And we couldn't help but think, you know, Mount Pleasant was just ranked the third safest city in the state.
Right.
And here we are in the same morning.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Colby, we appreciate it, buddy, and keep us updated.
Absolutely, will do. Thank you.
Colby Thielen from News 2 reported shooting this morning at the Ion neighborhood in Mount Pleasant. This is a pretty affluent area of Mount Pleasant. A lot of very nice big homes in that area. I've been over there many, many times.
Now, the TMA Morning Show continues with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 7:19, 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. And I tell you what I got for you right now. I have got a family four-pack of tickets to go see the Charleston River Dogs at any 2017 home game at the Joe. I'm going to take caller number 7 right now at 556-1250. That's 556-1250. You'll pick yourself up these wonderful tickets to go see the River Dogs play. Man, I'll tell you what, they are, it's an exciting time. Anytime you get out there at the Joe, the food's great. All the activities they have are fantastic. I mean, really, the post-game shows are just absolutely magnificent. And everything they do during the game is a lot of fun, too. So, caller number 7, as we scroll through the callers right now to get to caller number 7, we'll go ahead and go to the phones and say, hey, good morning, who's this?
Jake,
how are you, buddy?
Good.
Jake, I guess your dad or your mom or dad is now the winner of these four tickets to go see the Charleston River Dogs. How about that, pal?
That's really cool.
Yeah, you like to get out there and watch the ball game?
Yes.
Have you? Do you go a lot?
Kind of.
Kind of? Well, good. Well, now you're kind of going to go again. So I'm going to put you on hold, and John Quincy is going to get all the information from you so that you can get back out there at the Joe and enjoy that. Also coming up this morning, I've got family four packs of tickets to give away to the Charleston Creek Festival, which is coming up this weekend. And literally, Sheila and I were sitting down last night trying to map out what would be the perfect time to go, because it's going to be a lot of fun. It's like I said, the Greek Festival, one of our favorite events here in the Lowcountry. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. Still trying to find out more information about what's going on at ION in Mount Pleasant. As the officers, police were called out there this morning, just off North Shelmore Boulevard in Mount Pleasant. Now, they've actually got Saturday Street blocked off right now. There are, from what Colby Thielen was telling us, about a lot of police officers are there. There's a lot of police activity. A fire truck is there, and there are reports that an ambulance is on the scene. As soon as we find out more about this, we will certainly let you know what's going on out there in ION. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. We're going to be talking more about the gas tax that has been approved. Looks like it's going to go back to the House now, and they will do a final vote on it, and then they will send it on to Governor Henry McMaster, who says he's going to veto this thing. He's not going to be the governor, the first governor in 30 years to raise the gas tax here in South Carolina. And it will add over the next 6 years, it's going to add 12 cents per gallon to your gas bill when you head to the pumps. But we're hearing now that gas usage here in South Carolina has been reduced dramatically. Now, one of the issues that a lot of people were talking about, what does the government do when they want to change your behavior? What does the government do? They raise taxes on things, right? They don't want you drinking sugary drinks, so they raise gas prices. They don't want you smoking or prices on sugary drinks. They don't want you smoking, so they raise the tax on cigarettes. They don't want you, you know, whatever behavior they want to change from you, which I don't think is the role of the government. But if they want to change behavior, what do? They raise the taxes in hopes that you will stop or cut down or curb your use or whatever behavior you're exhibiting. Does it not then make sense that if you raise the gas tax here in South Carolina, if you raise the tax on gas, that people will find ways to use less and less gasoline? Doesn't that make sense? I mean, if it works in one situation, then it's probably going to work in the next situation. And we're finding out now that gas demand, prices of gas are being reduced here in South Carolina because the demand is lower. People aren't using as much gas. Now, we are getting into the summer season, and a lot of people are going to be doing a lot more traveling. But maybe if gas was raised, because remember back when it was pushing right up there at $4 a gallon? You kind of planned things, didn't you? You said, all right, listen, we got to go out. We got to get in the car. Let's make sure we get all of our shopping done, run all of our errands today. That way we're not constantly going back and forth and using all of this gas. So we will see if it actually raises this, what, $500 million that they're talking about using for the roads here in South Carolina. Now, the Governor McMaster says we got the money. The money's there. We're just not spending it on roads. So then your question has to be, why not?
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 7:40, 20 minutes until 8 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. There were some protests yesterday down on Calhoun Street about the changing or switching around of principals with the Charleston County School District. Let's go to the phones right now and talk with Kate Darby. She is the chair of the Charleston County School District Board of Trustees. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Well, it had to be an exciting place to be yesterday down at 75 Calhoun Street. What was your reaction to seeing 100 people protesting?
It brought back memory to probably 20 years ago when Jenny Dearen led a group that dropped tennis shoes off and shoes off at the Calhoun Street. But it was good to see people being involved, people wanting to be heard, you know, people wanting to let us know how they feel. Everything was very peaceful. And I think there was a good dialogue.
So they were protesting a couple of things. One, principals being moved from the schools that are they're currently at, and how teachers are being evaluated. So let's start out with the principals. Do community members have a valid concern when it comes to principals being moved from a place where they seem to be having a little success?
Well, I think that I'm a parent, and I can understand their concern about the change, about a principal leaving that they really like. But I don't think they have a concern about who's going to replace that principal. And the way that it works in the state is that the principals are employed by the county, not by the specific school.
Right.
And we, every year, there are some principals who move from one school to another or from one role to another. And we are being very aggressive about everything we can do to improve student achievement in Charleston County. And those principals that are being moved, they have talent that can be, really would benefit other schools. So that's really the reason they're being moved. Nobody's not have a job. They all have their contracts as principals. So we hope we can use their strong skills in other areas.
So
we are certainly going to work with the community on their replacement.
So when a principal signs a contract with the school district, it just says they're going to work for the district. It doesn't say they're going to be at this school or that school.
Correct. Yes.
Now, here at our offices here, we have a thing called HABU, highest and best use. Is that kind of what you're using here?
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. It is highest and best use. And, somebody asked me yesterday about, are the days of a principal being in their school for 20 to 30 years gone? And there probably are going to be some of that. But with everything changing in the world today, it's changing in technology. It's changing in how we educate our children. I think we do need to look at where our principals can be of highest and best use. Perhaps somebody has a real strong skill with curriculum, and we have a school that needs that. So we're definitely looking to place the principals where they can make the biggest difference.
Changes like this, do they have to be approved by the board?
So the board, by state law, the board has to approve the principal's contract. So every year we approve the teacher's contracts and the principal's contracts. But the board is not responsible where principals go. That is the responsibility of the superintendent. She has that responsibility.
So in this situation where the board and the district are trying to do what's best for the school district as a whole, don't you think, a lot of the, really, if you're a parent, the only school that you really have a concern with is your kid's school, but you guys have a responsibility to the district as a whole, right?
Correct. We do. And I love the fact that parents are so engaged with their school and concerned about it. And so that's a good thing. So when the decision was made to make some of these principal changes, we knew that some parents would be unhappy. But as you said, we've got to look at our total 86 schools. And I'll say this board with the superintendent post away, we've really made a decision that we have got to improve student achievement across the district. I mean, we have the best of the best and the worst of the worst. And we live in this wonderful community of Charleston, and our students all deserve the best. And they deserve the best teachers, the best principals, and the best opportunities for them to learn. So that's kind of the big picture that we're having to look at.
Some of the protests yesterday were also about teacher evaluations. The way the protesters were talking, you would think that a lot of teachers are being put on improvement plans. Is this the case?
No, that is not the case. On the teacher evaluation piece, I think there is a lot of misinformation out there. So basically, we have about 3,000 teachers, and as any school district or business does, we have an evaluation plan that we do, with every teacher. The state requires us to use something called ADEPT, is the state evaluation plan. But this also, the state is moving towards passing legislation that would require school districts to use value-added measures, test scores, as they are evaluating their schools. And
right.
that will pass at some point. So we tried a system this year called EVAS, and it's E-V-A-A-S. And what EVAS does is it takes student scores from the state-administered tests, like SC Ready for English and math in grades 3 and 8, and SC Pass in science and social studies, and end-of-course exams in high school, so like algebra, English, biology. And they put all those different scores together, and then they kind of give a ranking for the teachers. And we tried that as just a point of discussion with our teachers this year. Some of the information was not accurate yet because we hadn't done something that's called roster verified to make sure that every student that was supposed to be in that teacher's class was in that class for those tests. Some got pulled out. So anyway, the EVAS is just one little component of a discussion that we would have with a teacher. There's a lot of components to that. There's something called classroom observation. There's other things for looking at classes proficiency. So it's just like a data point. Nobody this next year is on a performance plan just because of standardized test scores. That's not the case, and that never will be the case. The test scores are just a component of an overall evaluation you might do with the teacher, and it not any way meant to be punitive.
Right. That was going to be my next question. We're talking with Kate Darby, the chair of the Charleston County School District Board of Trustees. So if a teacher goes on a plan, so to speak, a lot of people are saying, well, this is just the first step in letting them go. And you're saying that is not necessarily the case.
That is not the case at all. And I will say this. We know how important our teachers are to the school district. There aren't as many people coming out of college going into the teaching profession. Mm-hmm. So we have some fantastic teachers. But just as I would in my business, sometimes I have an employee who is doing great in certain areas but might need a little help in one area. They go on a performance improvement plan.
Right.
And the district does the same thing. So, I mean, it's tough being a teacher. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got to deal with just different personalities of children and parents and different learning levels. And so we want to support those teachers. So a performance improvement plan would be just what are the supports that we can give to that teacher to help them perhaps improve in that area or build some more skill in that area. So it is not in any way negative. We want to keep our teachers, but if somebody's struggling in a certain area, we want to be able to, you know, provide the supports for them in that area.
Right. Now, you know, in whatever business you're in, whatever profession you have, you want to improve. Why is there a disconnect there with the teachers in thinking that this is all about test scores? Have you guys done as good a job as maybe you can do in communicating this with the teachers in the district about those that go on the plan?
We can definitely communicate better. Mm-hmm. No question. I will say, I think that from when my children were in school, the district as a whole communicates better. But if I'm from getting to where the decision was made to the teachers, clearly it wasn't communicated as well as it could have been.
Right.
There's also somebody who likes to stir things up a little bit and may not have had all the correct information. So I've met with some teachers. They reached out to me. They had such great feedback. We're going to go and meet with their whole teacher group and ask a couple of them to help us as we continue to implement this process. And how can we do it better? I mean, I know I am, and I know the superintendent is. I always look back. What went well? What are we going to do differently? And we certainly could communicate that better.
So if there was one thing that you wanted to tell the community, the teachers, and the parents of these schools as far as principal contracts and teacher evaluations, what would that be?
I would want to tell them that, you know, we live in the best city in the world, and we want our school district to be the best in the world to provide that best education to their children, and we are working very hard to do that, and they can rest assured that we're going to get really strong principals in any of those schools where principals are moving out, and that the teachers that they've been heard, and that we understand they don't want student achievement to be the focus part of their evaluation, and it won't. It'll be a talking point. And just and then we appreciate all the work everybody does to support the school district.
Kate Darby, chair of the Charleston County School District Board of Trustees, thank you so much for being on the program. We'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful day.
You too. WTMA.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Good morning to you. It's 7:58, just a couple minutes until 8 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Not a whole lot has changed right now as far as we know with that shooting out in, a reported shooting out in Ion. We don't have a whole lot more information about that. Shots were reported fired this morning just about 6 o'clock as we were coming on the air, and we still don't have a whole lot of information. Kobe Thielen was out there from News 2, said that about 12 police units were out there in Mount Pleasant at the Ion neighborhood, and there were there was a fire truck out there and also reports of an ambulance, but no further information. As soon as we know more about this situation in Ion, we will certainly let you know.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
I remember specifically saying, you know, it wouldn't really be fair of us to tell you this and then expect you to sit on your hands.
That was Sally Yates testifying yesterday before Congress, and in response to their investigation of Michael Flynn. And but the big question wasn't asked. And this is, I think if you ask a lot of people exactly what the big question is here. Now, they're trying to show that the Trump administration colluded with the Russians, and or the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to win the 2016 election. However, James Clapper and Susan Yates giving their testimony yesterday, they didn't really answer one of the big questions that they, you know, Senator Lindsey Graham kept asking them was, who leaked, who unmasked Michael Flynn? So either one of two things happened. Either they had a FISA warrant to go in and do surveillance on Michael Flynn, or he was caught up in this incidental surveillance where American citizens are not supposed to be unmasked. But now we are hearing. Now, remember, this is the same hearing that Susan Rice was requested that she testify at, and she refused. She said, I'm not going to do it. Well, they ought to subpoena her. They ought to subpoena her, get her in there, and question her under oath. The only thing that really came out of this hearing yesterday was what James Clapper said, is that there is no evidence that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians. But the media is going to keep running with this talking point and trying to make sure that in any way possible that the Trump administration is undermined. Really, what they're trying to do is they're trying to show that the presidency of Donald Trump is illegitimate, that he shouldn't even be in the White House right now. And they're trying to find any grounds whatsoever so that the Democrats can come along and start impeachment hearings on President Trump. And so far, none of it has worked. But I think it's really awful that people can make these blanket statements, such as, we are learning today that Charlie James is under investigation by the State Department. Oh, well, what's he under investigation for? Well, we can't say. What's the evidence that he did anything wrong? Well, we can't say that. Oh, you can't say anything like that, but you can come out and smear somebody openly and say that they are under investigation by the State Department? You can do that, but you can't tell us why? Yes, that is correct. That's what I'm telling you. Now, we know why Hillary Clinton was under investigation by the FBI, because she had this server. And again, where did that go? Where's the outcry for us to investigate how emails from Hillary Clinton got on Anthony Weiner's laptop? That seems to be, oh, well, I don't know how that happened. Gosh. Oh, better not look into that. Better not, you know, make sure somebody goes to. And I heard, it was so interesting the other day when when they were questioning Comey about it, and Lindsey Graham was saying, and am I correct in saying that if you share government or classified information with someone who doesn't have security clearance, is that against the law? And Comey was like, well, either it is or it isn't against the law. So we need to know, because we got some folks that have been spending some time in jail, including a sailor who took some pictures of a nuclear submarine. He's in jail right now because of that, because he shared it with his family. So is it or isn't it against the law? This thing is all just right now a big witch hunt to try, like I said, to delegitimize the presidency of the United States. So the only thing coming out of that hearing last night, yesterday, was the fact that there's no evidence. All of these things that the Democrats are claiming about the Trump campaign and the Russians, none of it's proven. But they're still running with it like it's a football. Still running with it. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. Let's go to Rodney in Goose Creek. Rodney, how are you?
Fine, and you?
Good, good. What's up, buddy?
Good to talk to you, Charlie.
Yes, sir.
You are hitting things just right, buddy, and I hope you keep doing it, because we need people speaking the truth. I'd just like to recommend to your listeners a guy named Malcolm Muggeridge,
mm-hmm.
who was a British journalist, and he was a communist. And he went to report on the famine in the Ukraine
mm-hmm.
back in the early 1900s, and found that the communists were actually responsible with their policies for starving millions of people.
Right.
And you've mentioned things like that about how their policies do it, but Malcolm Muggeridge was a heathen, and he became a Christian.
Right.
And he said things like, bad humor is an evasion of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about credulity as one of the particular sins of the 20th century. And he said this: it has been said that human beings who stop believing in God, they say they'll believe nothing. But the truth is much worse. They'll believe anything.
Right.
And I think that's probably a good summation. He's a good historical figure. He died in the early 1990s at an old age. But he's written quite a bit on that. And, of course, he had his detractors that said that the famine in the Ukraine was not even existent.
Right.
So there are a lot of parallels to a modern-day society. And when you don't care enough about God and what he thinks, to establish your policies online,
mm-hmm.
you damage human beings greatly, because you keep them from reaching human potential.
Yeah, you're right.
And God is certainly concerned about that. Whether we like it or not, the issue of a lie is it's a spiritual matter. And you know, I know that only God can take the human, can take hate out of the human heart.
Right.
And if Jesus said he's the way, the truth, and the life, we have to pay attention to that. So what we're facing in this country is something far more insidious.
Well, I mean, it's like the Bible says, we don't war with flesh and blood. We war with principalities and powers. Rodney, exactly. I appreciate you calling in, buddy. Thank you very much. Great thing there that Rodney said. These folks on the left are just believing anything and everything that the Democrats are saying these days. It's like, I don't know, that they send out an email with talking points every morning. Here's Bill West of the Ashley. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, long time no talk, Charlie.
Yes, sir. Good to hear you.
Hey, you know, nobody seems to go to jail in Washington.
Right.
So, you know, and Comey is just a laughing stock. I mean, no charges get pressed. I mean, from Lois Lerner to all those buffoons at the VA,
mm-hmm.
to this, to that, to whatnot, Hillary's stuff completely drops off the map. Nobody goes to jail.
Right, but if you and I did it as private citizens, we would absolutely go to jail. And you're right, there is a huge double standard.
It's infuriating.
Yeah.
Because people broke the law, but yet if you're in Washington, you don't get to go to jail. But yet take that private or take that, you know, guy in the military.
The sailor.
The sailor, oh, he goes to jail.
Yeah.
Everybody else goes to jail, but these immoral buttholes.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. We'll end it with that. Let's go out to Somerville and talk to Paul. How are you, Paul?
Top of the morning,
Chief. Yes, sir.
I'd like to point out that this witch hunt will continue. Because
oh, yeah.
There's no downside for it because we never hit them back.
Yeah.
They should be prosecuted. These people who unmasked us, they broke the law.
Right.
Hillary should be indicted already. She clearly, at least it looks like she broke the law.
Yeah.
People wearing masks in public and throwing firebombs, they're breaking the law.
But here's the thing, Paul. But you know, clearly she broke the law. Clearly, you know, they will not prosecute these people. I mean, how did these emails get on Anthony Weiner's laptop?
I mean, the basic fact of the matter is there's a joke going around the internet that because Anthony Weiner sent out pictures of his junk to underage girls,
right,
managed to prevent Hillary from being in the White House.
Yeah, well,
you know, I mean, the basic fact of the matter is stuff should not happen by accident. Legal authorities should be going after people who are breaking the law, and if they're not going to. You know, how do we defend ourselves?
Well, yeah, and you're right, Paul, but, you know, we had Comey come on and say, hey, you know, yeah, laws were broken, but we can't find anybody that would prosecute her. We can't find any good prosecutor out there who would make a case against her. Well, you know what? Then the system is broken. Laws are only as good as the people who will enforce them. And that's why Sally Yates was fired from the Trump administration. She was a holdover from the Obama administration, granted, and she was only there as Secretary of State in the interim. However, she refused to abide by Trump's immigration order. Therefore, you got to go. Remember that. She was fired for insubordination.
TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 8:39, 21 minutes until 9 o'clock on The Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Tell you what I'm going to do right now. I got a four-pack of tickets to the 47th Annual Greek Festival, which is coming up this weekend at Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church downtown. They've got great shuttle buses there to take you to the event, so you don't really have to worry about parking. Four tickets to the 47th Annual Greek Festival. I'll give them away to caller number 7 right now at 556-1250. That's 556-1250. Caller number 7 going to be picking up these tickets to the Greek Festival, which, like I keep saying, is my favorite festival in all of the Lowcountry. So if you would like these, pick up the phones as we are scrolling through these calls right now to pick up caller number 7. And we've got them on the line right now. Hey, who's this?
Denise.
Denise, how are you on this Tuesday morning?
I'm a little bit better right now.
Well, you should be, because you just picked yourself up four tickets to the 47th Annual Greek Festival. How about that?
Great. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Do you get out there a lot?
No,
well, a lot, but every year?
It's been a long, long time since I've been. So
well,
do it.
I am certainly glad that you won these tickets. Enjoy those. It's going to be a great time. I'm going to put you on hold, get some information from you, and you'll be on your way to the 47th Annual Greek Festival downtown. Again, it's a lot of fun. All right, there's a new report out. The folks at Wallet Hub, they did a list of the best and the worst states to be a police officer. And it looks like coming in at number 1, the best state to be a police officer is North Dakota. Number 2, Connecticut. Number 3, believe it or not. Now, when we talk about New York, we often just think about the city of New York. But the state of New York is number 3 as far as becoming a quality of life for a police officer. You got to go way down to 45th. South Carolina is the 45th best state, if you could say that, to be a police officer. We beat Tennessee, Kentucky, New Mexico, Alaska, Arkansas, and Louisiana. It looks like, now a lot of the factors here, this is one of the interesting things, a lot of the factors that they weighed in was the dangers of being on the job. And not only did they put things in there like the crime rate and things like that, guess what else showed up? Because you can imagine a lot of police officers spend a lot of their time where? On the road. And the road conditions here in South Carolina were one of the factors that made being a police officer here so dangerous. And again, we got to get something done about that. So let me just give you some of these things. South Carolina. Now, number one is the best. 25 is average. We are 51st in median income for law enforcement officers when you adjust for the cost of living. We are 44th in violent crime rate. We are 23rd in homicides cases solved. 43rd in state and local police protection expenses per capita. 46th in property crime rate. 26th in police deaths per 1,000 officers. And we are 51st in road safety. 51st in road safety. So that's pretty horrible statistics right there for us as we, I just sit back and I wonder why would you want to be a police officer anymore? Because, you know, you don't get any support from the media. You don't get any support from a lot of people in the community. You know, everything you do is looked at under a microscope. Now, of course, when we say 51st, you're saying, wait a minute, hold on. There's 50 states, Charlie. Well, they also factor in the District of Columbia as one of those, which is actually better than us. And you're talking about a much higher violent crime rate in the District of Columbia than we have here in South Carolina. So those roads are definitely a factor in this. So we got to do something. We got to do something out there to make sure that our police officers and those people out there that get out every single day and do what they can to protect us, we got to make sure that we're protecting them right back. So we'll talk a little bit more about this coming up.
1250 WTMA. Now, here's more of the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
There were also some not-so-nice things that people said online about me, including members of the media. Now, this is a real headline from the New York Post. Jimmy Kimmel's obscene lies about kids and medical care. This is from something called the Washington Times. I don't think it's a real newspaper, but shut up, Jimmy Kimmel, you elitist creep. I cannot count the number of times I've been called an out-of-touch Hollywood elitist creep, which I have to say, I kind of appreciate, because when I was a kid, we had to drink the powdered milk because we couldn't afford the liquid. Our orange juice came frozen out of a can. It would squeeze out. My father, on the rare occasion we took a family trip, would hide the dog in the back of the car and then smuggle it into our motel room to avoid paying the $2 pet fee. So I had to say, my dream was to become an out-of-touch Hollywood elitist, and I guess it came true.
I guess it has. I guess it has, because he took the opportunity the other night to politicize his son's birth defect, if you will, his heart condition. Jimmy Kimmel's son was born with a hole in his heart, basically, for lack of a better term. And he took the opportunity to go on and to slam the American Health Care Act that has been put forth by the Republicans. Now, this is straight out of the playbook of the Democrats. You always drag somebody out that's going to be affected by whatever you don't like. Look at Kazir Khan during the Democrat convention, where he held up his passport and said, you know, if you can read mind. He took the opportunity to drag the memory of his son, who is an American hero, drag his son through the mud to slam the future president at the time of the United States. So now Jimmy Kimmel comes along and he says, hey, you know, we want to keep Obamacare because it will help my son. I want to know, here's the thing, and nobody will give me the answer. How much did this surgeon, Jimmy Kimmel's son, had to go through 3 hours of heart surgery shortly after he was born? How much did that doctor charge you, Mr. Kimmel? How much was that surgery? Why are you not asking that doctor to reduce his rates? Why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you asking the hospital to reduce their fees? By the way, it was a charity hospital that his son went to, by the way. So they always want to drag somebody out that's, you know, oh, poor me, look at me, I'm being so horribly affected by this. Why don't you look at the people who have been affected by Obamacare? Obamacare stinks. It is stank from day one. From the get-go, it is stank. You want to keep your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Well, you can't. You like your plan, you can keep your plan. Well, you can't. Family of four, your premiums are going to go down $2,500 a year. Well, that didn't happen. In fact, they doubled. Why aren't you showing the people out there, the people that we talk to every single day that say, hey, look at this. Now the number, I can't even afford health insurance, but I have to get it by law, or guess what? I'm going to be fined. Scott's west of the Ashley. Scott, how are you?
I'm well, Charlie.
Yes, sir.
If his son had been born in a lot of other countries, he wouldn't have made it.
Right.
With their health care system. Charlie, Jimmy Kimmel's story about growing up with the powdered milk and, you know, that's all right. And he's done very well for himself, very talented person. But I'm just wondering how his life would have been if he'd grown up on welfare or other government assistance.
Yeah.
Would he have been as motivated to work as hard and get where he is?
No. Probably not. But I don't have any sympathy. I mean, I'm sorry, because you know what? I was raised by my grandparents, who were both on fixed income. We drank powdered milk for a time. Our orange juice was concentrated. But
I did too. I mean, Charlie, when I lived with my grandparents, they didn't have an automobile.
Right.
They'd have to stock up, and they had a chest freezer.
Yeah.
And that's how we lived when I lived with them. But this, like, for instance, they just announced that Charleston County is going to feed kids breakfast over the summer.
Right.
Now, I love to see kids get breakfast. But I just think we're indoctrinating them and conditioning them to believe that food comes from the government.
And it doesn't. Yeah, yeah.
If a church was doing this, great. That'd be something I could get behind. But we're taking young people with their God-given talents they're born with, and we're, as a caller earlier mentioned, you know, robbing them of their potential and their ability to grow and be all that they can be. And I wish there'd be more emphasis on that aspect.
Yeah, Jimmy, you're right.
Kimmel, congratulations, Jimmy. Now, why are you getting kicked by the government on every dollar you make for, you know, 35 or 40 cents? You worked hard, you got where you are, and now look at how you're rewarded by the government.
Yeah, they're taking an astronomical amount of money. Scott, I appreciate it. But so I think Jimmy Kimmel and his son, and again, hate the fact that his son was born with this defect in his heart. His son is going to have to go through several surgeries, but he's already had one, and he's going to have to go through several more before he's a young teenager, including, I think, he's going to have to get a heart valve transplant. So Jimmy Kimmel's son is going to have issues his entire life because of his heart. And again, I'm not trying to be mean or anything like that, but let's just take a look at the reality of the situation, because they all want to talk about pre-existing conditions. Well, if you have a pre-existing condition, you're not going to be able to get insurance. No, that's not right.
Oh, it's not? Well, if you have a pre-existing condition, you're going to have to pay more for your premiums. Well, not technically right, because there is this $8 billion fund that has been set up that is going to offset the increase in premiums because of a pre-existing condition. But however, why shouldn't you have to pay more if you have a pre-existing condition? I'm sorry, but life isn't fair. So Jimmy Kimmel's son is going to have to get several surgeries throughout his life. He is going to take more out of that money pool that we call the insurance program. He's going to be more of a drain on that than the average child out there. So why shouldn't this child pay a little bit more for insurance than the average person? If you are 300 pounds, you've got type 2 diabetes because of your lifestyle, if you sit around in your mom's basement, if you've got high blood pressure, if you've got, you know, all of the other issues that come with being morbidly obese, why shouldn't you have to pay a little bit more money for your health insurance? Why should that person pay the same premiums as somebody who, I don't know, runs a triathlon? Why should you have to do that?
It's like car insurance.
Exactly.
You get a couple of tickets.
You're going to pay more.
You run into somebody else, you pay more money.
Yep. You get a DUI, hey, you're going to pay a lot more.
Yep.
A lot more. But they're going to drag out all of these people and say, well, look at this poor person. They're going to pay more. Yes, I'm sorry. That is doggone it's life. And I hate it for you. That's why the government shouldn't be involved in health insurance. So, I don't know. But he just continues to drag out the poor and the downtrodden just as a talking point to show you just how mean those horrible, mean-spirited Republicans are. And they do it time and time again. So we'll talk a little bit more about this. Also, a Newsweek editor hopes that Republicans and their families lose insurance and die. Yep, that's what they said.